pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. Midweek in Major League Soccer tonight when undefeated LAFC takes on the, well, no wins, Vancouver Whitecaps. And to talk about LAFC's amazing beginning of season in 2019, Alicia Rodriguez joins us. Alicia, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well, perhaps not as well as an LAFC fan, because this has been a remarkable start to the season. As Kevin just said, 19 points off of seven games, 2.71 points per game. More important this time of year to look at that figure with the mismatched names or numbers. But what has been the key? I mean, can you sum it up in one or two sentences, Alicia? What's been the key to such a great start?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think one thing is obviously the play of Carlos Vela. He's been fantastic. He has 8 goals and 5 assists through 7 games. So you really can't argue with that kind of production from your star player. And then the other part is I think there's a sense of continuity between on the roster. They brought back 10 starters from last season and only brought in one new guy to start. And so far it's really paying off. And even in talking to the players, they seem to really benefit from the ability to get more time to work together and kind of absorb the game plans and execute the ideas that Bob Bradley wants them to do. And, you know, so far it's working out pretty well.
I guess the only worry, because sports fans like to worry, so the one worry someone might have is that maybe they're you know, starting too quick or something, that they might get complacent. Do you feel that the culture that Bob Bradley has created around there will allow this team to keep this level of intensity and results up throughout the year?
I mean, it's hard to say, obviously, because, you know, you can't predict that they're, like, going to shut off mentally at some point. But I think it's pretty likely that they're going to stay locked in. You know, that's not to say that they may not have a dip at some point in the season. That seems pretty likely over the course of a long season. But they do seem to be locked in on winning, you know, something tangible this year. And I think the fact that they're doing so well, you know, motivates them to keep going. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of soccer left to play, but so far so good, and I don't expect them to shut off necessarily.
We've talked about Carlos Vela and his amazing production this year so far. Diego Rossi as well last week with a hat trick. But a player that has contributed a lot to the 6 wins, you know where I'm going with this, Alicia. We've talked about this player many times. He's a favorite of our show. Marc-Anthony Kay coming back from injury and taking over where he left off, one of the best defensive midfielder with a bit more of an attacking ideology this year too. What can you tell us about Marc-Anthony Kay in 2019?
Yeah, I think he's been playing great, like you said, and his two-way play is really good. He has a couple goals off set pieces, and I know that's something the team has been working on. They want to increase the number of set piece goals. He seems to be one of their biggest, if not maybe their biggest at this point, weapon in free kicks and corner kicks in that regard. I think the big thing that's changed about his game this year is that he has kind of an edge to him. And, you know, it's a little bit facile to compare it to hockey, but he sort of reminds me a little bit of an enforcer. You know, he's the guy that gets riled up in the midfield and isn't afraid to get in an opponent's face. If he doesn't like what's going on, that kind of thing. So I think he's playing a pretty important role, something that I think is helping the team kind of step up in intensity and making sure they maintain that intensity for 90 minutes. And, you know, I think that that's been kind of the intangible part of his game that's really helping the team right now.
Tonight, LAFC faces Vancouver, and Vancouver's manager, Mark Dos Santos, was an assistant coach for the first year of LAFC last year in Major League Soccer. Anything that changed with LAFC? You mentioned the starting 11 is very similar, with 10 out of 11 usually coming back this year from last year. But one of the changes was Mark Dos Santos leaving LAFC to take over Vancouver. Does anything in the training area or in the way the team is managed that changed? Or does Bob Bradley evolve as well as staff to keep himself up to date?
Well, I think if we see this game play out against the Whitecaps and LAFC, and the Whitecaps bring a win against LAFC, of course we're going to point to Mark Dos Santos having better knowledge on LAFC than pretty much anybody in the league. However, I think what it's going to come down to probably is LAFC saying, you know our ideas, and we're just going to out-execute you. You know, we dare you to do your job better than we do our job. And I think that they have cause for being confident in that regard. That's not to say that, you know, Vancouver couldn't do something. We all know this is MLS, of course, but I think that they're banking on something being pretty similar to what they did last year and just daring the Whitecaps to stop them. And, you know, like I said, I don't think that there's been huge changes as far as style of play, as far as approach or players used or anything like that. I really think that the big, not the big change, the big element this season has been continuity and really sticking with what they were doing last season and saying we just need a little bit more time to refine what we're doing and it'll work out in the end. And, you know, again, it's very early, but so far so good on that front.
Last year, we used to ask you a lot about unsung heroes. I like to ask this a lot for anyone I talk to at a market. So, you know, I think we might have pointed to Mark Anthony Kay last year. He's not unsung anymore. So can you maybe name some other players that have stepped up that we don't hear about that are a little beyond the headlines to contribute to LAFC's great start?
Sure. I mean, I think pretty much everybody's playing well at this point. There's not really anyone who you would say, oh, he's having a really terrible time so far this season. But I think there's three players I would briefly highlight. There's two Colombians, Eduardo Atuesta, who was in the league last year on loan at LAFC. He was signed permanently in the offseason. He also seems to have stepped up his game a little bit in the offseason, doing a lot more of kind of the string pulling in the midfield, and I think he's really settling in and taking a big step up, I think, this season. His compatriot is the aforementioned single new starter, Eddie Segura. He's a central defender who has really just slotted in seamlessly. And in addition, I think he's been an upgrade over some of the defenders that they've had in the back in the past. So he's really taken to MLS quickly. And he's also on loan, but I expect him to be signed as well permanently. And then the big surprise has been Latif Blessing, who in MLS, he's been known as kind of a winger, wide forward, you know, a guy you get some minutes off the bench from most likely. He's been moved around quite a bit this year. He played right back off the bench for most of one game, and then he's been playing central midfield for almost a month now. And in LAFC's system, the midfielders have to play defense and, you know, attack pretty heavily. It's very much a two-way role. He's been playing great. So that's been a huge surprise, his versatility, but also the fact that he pretty much is making a case that he can't be replaced in the lineup. And I wouldn't be surprised if there really is a battle for, you know, for that midfield spot. He may be able to keep it in the long run.
All right. That does move a little bit across the city into Carson and talk about the rivals of LAFC, also off to a great start. I think surprising a lot of people. I don't know why we should be surprised with the Galaxy playing well with the talent they have there. From an outside perspective, it almost looks like an addition by subtraction kind of situation with the Dos Santos leaving. Is it more complicated than that from your perspective?
I don't know if it's necessarily because he's left they're playing better. I think probably the big reason they're playing better is, or they're getting results, is because Zlatan is healthy, and I think they have a coach who, in Guillermo Barros-Skelotto, who is capable of grinding out performances and getting results. I mean, that's basically his trademark at Boca Juniors, was to just win in any means possible. And when you have one of the best players in the league in Zlatan Ibrahimovic, it's pretty easy to get a couple, you know, one or two good plays in a game to go ahead, and then you just grind out the rest of the game, and that's what they've been doing. It's often not very pretty, but it's certainly effective, and yeah, they're kind of shooting up week over week, and I think to an extent taking people by surprise, because I don't think that they were necessarily expecting them to be rising so quickly in the Western Conference standings.
With both teams playing so well, does that add another element to the rivalry, to the new rivalry in LA, El Tráfico? Do you think that it will have even more spark this year?
I think definitely, yeah. And it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, in the first match, if LAFC can get a victory. If not, if the Galaxy get a victory, it's going to continue to perpetuate kind of this idea of, you know, the Galaxy having the upper hand in the rivalry on LAFC, which is going to stick in the craw of LAFC. You know, so it could really add a lot of intrigue. But if this is something that potentially also could play a role in the supporter shield, it's going to be even bigger, definitely.
Yesterday on the show, Alicia, we had Michael Lewis to talk about New York and how New York is terrible at soccer in 2019. The exact opposite end of the continent and the exact opposite end of the spectrum. LA is really good at soccer in 2019, but do you think, is it too early to maybe say this? But I don't know, maybe it is, but does the fact that LA, both teams, are having a great beginning of the season, and Kansas City as well, and it seems to me the best teams in Major League Soccer this year seems to be from the Western Conference, is the big stick back in the Western Conference backyard?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think I think you're right. I would agree that I think it seems like the best teams are assembled in the West right now. But I think if you're talking East versus West overall, it's a lot tougher because I think there's three or four teams at the bottom of the West who are really struggling. I actually think the Whitecaps are probably the most poised to, you know, potentially figure it out and, you know, kind of make a run up the standings at some point this year. But I think some of the other teams are really going to be stuck down there. And, you know, in the East, we may see maybe the teams at the top aren't quite as high, but the teams at the bottom aren't necessarily as low either. So that may be a way in which parity is kind of playing out in a new way in MLS, where, you know, the conferences are kind of set up differently. And if we're talking about the top teams, yeah, I think we're seeing an accumulation in the West right now. If we're talking about the, you know, each conference overall, which one is the stronger one, I think that's actually probably on balance pretty close.
Alicia, as we're speaking right now, the GA Cup and the Dallas Cup are both undergoing, of course, which is the top sort of seen as the top development prospect sort of tournaments that MLS teams are involved in each year. LAFC, being a new club, isn't really that involved on that level. But can you give us a bit of an update on what is happening on the academy side, on the development side for LAFC?
Yeah, sure. The academy is involved in the Generation Adidas Cup this year for the first time. They're playing in the brand new U15 bracket. So I don't want to say that they created the U15 group just for LAFC, but it just so happens that they have it at the same time that the academy has their first group at that age level. So they've qualified. They're going to be playing in that. The academy is building out slowly, so they're adding. I thought at one point they might add, you know, a couple of age groups at a time each year. You know, maybe they would add 2 years at once. They're not planning on doing that. They're going to just go with their first group and have them progress naturally. So they're just going to increase it a year, you know, one at a time. So they're at the U15 level right now. So they have a few more years to go to fully build out the academy on the boys' side. But, you know, things are looking pretty good so far. Obviously, when you're at U15 level, you're not quite at the level where you can really start pinpointing prospects and kind of putting an extra burden on those kids coming up and, you know, giving them extra attention, that kind of thing. I think really we should wait at least a year until we can really dig into, you know, kind of specifics as far as, you know, these players' games and giving them, you know, a lot of publicity and that kind of thing. But signs look good so far. a different group, a younger group, won the U13 CONCACAF Champions League in the spring. No, last fall. So that's kind of a similar setup to the Generation Adidas Cup, a mini tournament between teams from around the region. And it seems like they're putting down, you know, productive stakes so far. They have a bunch of kids who've been called up to youth national teams, and it seems very promising. And I think the vision, it's a slow build for sure, and I think we're still probably at least a couple years out before homegrown signings are going to be, you know, made. But I think they're definitely laying the groundwork, and it seems like, you know, they're on track to open up that pipeline in the years to come.
Alicia Rodriguez, managing editor of Angels on Parade, contributing on MLSsoccer.com and other places. Thank you very much for your time today, and we hope you have an enjoyable game tonight in Vancouver.
Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate it.
And we'll take a short break and come back and talk about the upset of the century, or just maybe the upset of the day yesterday in the Champions League.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins, as always, and this is Soccer Today on the Sports Podcasting Network. Before we continue and talk about yesterday's game in the Champions League, Dwayne, you wanted to do an update on the Kira McCormack story coming out of Vancouver. There's some planned protest for tonight's game for the supporters of the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Yeah, the main supporters groups, the two main supporters groups, Setsiders and Curva Collecta, are planning to walk out basically on the game at a protest of the Whitecaps' reaction, or more to the point, non-reaction to Kira's story and to the allegation from the 12 athletes that are, among other things, implying that they're saying that there was sexual misconduct involved in this incident back in 2008. This is on the heels of a second article that The Guardian put out yesterday, which talks about the, you know, again, toxic environment, that players were sexually targeted, were shattered. So some players were, you know, lost the interest in the game. FIFA Pro, the global representation body for footballers, has asked for the allegations to be investigated in full. Despite all of this, Canadian Soccer continues to, you know, to refuse to comment on this. I don't understand what Canada Soccer is doing. You know, when you're looking at the CSA, the people involved in the CSA weren't even around in 2008. So I get that they probably feel that they can't be held accountable for the actions of others, and that is true. But they should be held accountable for the fact that that this gentleman is still coaching and still has a coaching license, and why was that to take place? And they should still try and, you know, be upfront and open about this, at least make a comment on it, right? And this is frustrating to all end. The Whitecaps had made their initial statement, have not said anything since. This story continues to grind on. Obviously, if you want to listen to Kira talk directly, you can go back to a week ago Monday, to April 6th. Where we had our show, we were tweeting it a lot. It is now, just as of last night, became our most listened to show of the year. So it is getting out there and around. So I encourage people to keep sharing that, because the story needs to be told, and something needs to happen here. And the longest this goes on, you have walkouts happening in the stadiums tonight. The longer, I think the greater the fallout's going to be at the end. If the Whitecaps don't do something soon, then I think some heads are going to eventually end up rolling, including the biggest head of all. I put a poll out today asking whether Bobby Lenarduzzi should, you know, step aside because of this, and the results are pretty significantly in favor of that idea. Some of that's probably people just frustrated with him in general, but nonetheless, you know, ultimately when you're the president, the buck stops there, right? So
yeah.
He was president at the time, and they don't seem to be managing this particularly well.
That's the thing. He was involved back then, right? That's the biggest thing here. It has nothing to do with what he has done lately for the Vancouver Whitecaps, but he was in position back when the allegations are alleged to have happened. So if there's fallout to happen from the allegations, this is one of the outcome possible. Is people back who were involved back then that are still involved, well, might not be involved anymore.
Well, yeah, precisely. And if that's the end result, I mean, they made their own bed is what I'll have to say about this. I anticipate that we will not be interviewing Bobby anytime soon on the show. Since we've interviewed him in the past, he has given time before. He's been a pretty combative guy when you get him into an interview situation. And I suspect that that's what's happening a little bit here right now, because that is his personality, is he gets defensive when he feels he's cornered, and this is ultimately something that's cornering him. But, you know, if by off chance anyone close to his orbit is listening, you need to address this head on, otherwise it will take you down. That is my message to them. We will continue to cover this, obviously, as new information comes out. Right now we have no plans for further interviews, but that's, you know, not just saying that there won't be. But we will continue to follow it, as everyone should. It's an important story that needs to be addressed. It may be a decade old, but, you know, as we're seeing in other sports, these things aren't acceptable. They were never acceptable, but now at least people are open to tackling these uncomfortable situations head on, and we need to, and we will continue to do so.
Might be a decade old, but it doesn't mean that it's too late. That's the key here. It's that it's never too late. And if anyone is listening to us and has been affected by a similar situation, or just a situation like this, it's never too late to say something. And don't believe, no one's going to believe you. Someone will. So just talk. I know it's easy for us to say, but we're here to listen. Yeah. And I think that's important.
No, precisely. I mean, or if you don't want to talk publicly, there's ways to get help out there. And I think that you know, you should seek those resources out. And if you, I would suspect that someone like Kira would be more than open to helping you with that.
Yeah.
If you were to reach out to her, I mean, she's pretty easily to find on Twitter and things like that.
Yep, exactly. Now let's go back to the pitch for Champions League yesterday. Two big game and an unexpected result. Ajax confirming that it wasn't a fluke. After eliminating PSG, well, they got another big team in their on their, like, another big notch on their belt for that team. They eliminated Juventus and Ronaldo, so I guess that that big transfer was all for nothing for Juve, because they're still out before the semis.
Yeah, I joked yesterday with Manchester United and Juventus, which are two of the most popular teams in the world, but also two of the most unpopular teams in the world. Both being eliminated seconds apart in Europe, it was a bad day for the umpire, sort of a joke that they're evil. And obviously there's the Ronaldo allegations, which adds to this as well. But certainly let's focus on the positive, though. Ajax was full measure.
Yep.
Did they put enough fulls in there? Like, they were the better team over two legs, both.
Yeah, they were the
and
better
it's
team.
Remarkable.
That's it. I think that's the key here. They're a team. They're not just a bunch of players that don't necessarily seem to get along.
No. Look, it's the first time that a team from outside the Big Five has advanced this far since 2005. So it has been a long time since we have had a non-Big Five. And if you're a new listener that doesn't know who the Big Five is, I don't want to be condescending, but I also want to assume that means England, Germany, Italy, Spain, and France is considered the fifth of the Big Five. So the first time somebody from outside those five leagues has advanced to the semifinals, that's remarkable unto its own. Obviously, there's a big historical tie-in. Ajax is still a really massively supported team. It's kind of a hipster team, that's the fact nowadays.
It is. It's the total football team. It's the team that saw the revolution of how we analyzed the game in the early 70s and continue so and be dominating until the early 90s. And that was the heyday of Ajax. And I guess it's, if that was a golden age, I guess we just entered the silver age of Ajax football.
There's a lot of people about my age, Kevin, that sort of came of footballing age in the 90s that would call Ajax their team, that want to be... Well, he has some hits. I'm talking about some people that would have attached to them because they loved how they played and wanted to be the space backs a little bit different. You need to support the big teams in England because that's who you were seeing. But nonetheless, it's been a long wait for them.
It's been the team of Johan Cruyff before he goes to Barcelona. It's the team of that ideology of the total football, the revolution. So, and of course, it's the club that represented that aspect, especially in the Eredivisie. So, no, it is a legendary club, but no, it is. It is, even though, like, 30 years ago it's considered vintage. So, I guess it's vintage Ajax yesterday.
Yeah, and this is their window. I mean, they will lose some players, especially now that they've gone. Like, this, the irony of this, when you're a team of this stature, and it's weird to call Ajax a middle because they are a big club with a big history in many, many ways. But when you go deep, like Monaco did, you're going to be, you know, people are going to see your players more, and they're going to look at your players differently, and they're going to come in. The big boys are going to come in with their wallets, and it's going to be hard to ignore that, and this team will not be the same in future years. So as weird as this is to sound, I think if you're Ajax right now, you have to be like, we need to win this. Like, we're this far. We might as well win it now. And flash forwarding, they will play the winner of Spurs City. Spurs leads that tie 1-0 with the second game in City this afternoon. Obviously, you know what I'll be doing this afternoon.
Don't look for Dwayne. Dwayne's going to be at Opera Bob's at 3.
Yes, I started work at 6 a.m. this morning, so that was why. But at any rate, I'm a little punch drunk, that's why too. But nonetheless, look, I look at Spurs and City, and yes, I think City especially, but even Spurs would be favorite, I guess, over Ajax. But I also look at the way Ajax plays, and you know, I can speak to City better than Spurs. And Spurs, I think, honestly, I think that would be a 50-50 matchup, having watched Ajax play this, when you're talking about Spurs. But to get back to City, they would be clearly the favorite. They'd be the betting favorite. There's no doubt. There's a hell of a lot more talent on that team. They can go and deep type thing.
There's more talent on the bench, I think. and no offense to Ajax, but you see City's bench last game when there was De Bruyne, Jesus. You're like, geez, that's a heck of a bench.
Yes, but if City does overturn the lead today, and I'm in no way saying that's a for sure thing, but if they do, I would give Ajax a real chance in that tie. I think that tactically they match up very well against City in the sense that they're going to get at them. And if you look at the games that City has had problems, they tend to nowadays, it used to be that teams could really sit back and frustrate the hell out of them with a low block over the course of 90, but this particular City team doesn't, you know, over the last 2 years, I mean, they're on pace for back-to-back seasons, near 100 points. They are breaking down the low block pretty effectively. But when they do get taken down, particularly in Europe, it's when teams go at them. We saw it with Lyon earlier this year in the group stage. Lyon went at them, got out on them on the break and sort of attacked with purpose and were able
and
to
won.
Beat them.
And won at the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at the Monaco a couple of years ago, same thing. That is where they are vulnerable. If you go at City, you can expose them in their weakest areas, which are still tend to be sort of defending from the fullback position in particular. And if Fernandinho is not available, then there's a bit of a weakness there as well. But especially getting on that flanks and getting on your horse, that's a real area because City sets up with its fullbacks to attack. They're truly modern fullbacks, and you know they don't defend. That's not why they're on the pitch, because they don't really need to defend very often. They're playing 94% of the games, right? So if you're at Ajax and you go straight at that and you attack down those flanks, yeah, you have a chance against City, and City would have to adjust, have to play for that. You also factor in the fact that Pep has this weird sort of hang-up on the road in the Champions League where he sort of plays really conservatively. Yeah, I would not at all be comfortable saying it's a sure thing. You know, there's an article I saw on some of the Manchester stuff today was talking about, ooh, City fans are daring to dream now that it would be Ajax they draw. I'm like, come on, man. No, it's the semifinals of the Champions League. They're there on merit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not a fluke at this point. And it'll be fascinating. The other result yesterday, Barcelona 3, Manchester United 0, an aggregate of 4-0 for Barcelona versus Ole and his boys. Ole speaking of a rebuilding phase needing to happen, and that's pretty much the confidence of Manchester United, who just got eroded with this loss. Both ties, they lost. They lost the aggregate. They lost their confidence. Can they recover in time to get a few results in the Premier League to assure Champions League football next year? That's the question. Chelsea-Man United is going to be quite a battle until the end of the season with Spurs as well. But this loss, Barcelona moves on and will face the winner of Porto and Liverpool today. Liverpool has a 2-goal lead heading into the second leg in Portugal, but Barcelona moving on.
Yeah, and look, if I could speak personally for a second, it was a great fourth save for Dwayne. I had Manchester United eliminated from Europe, the Pittsburgh Penguins eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Raptors won a playoff game. Putting that aside, great day for me.
All
two of my most hated teams are
Juventus. And Juventus being booted out, opening up your side of the bracket for the Champions League for City. So no, obviously, Tuesday, April 16th was a good day for Dwayne. Everything coming up, Dwayne Rollins.
Yeah, there you go. I can't really ask for too much. I'm working on house money now when it comes to the NHL. Let's face facts. I got my payoff last year. But anyway, moving on from that. Caps fan, if you need to listen to me. Look, where were we on this? Oh yeah, the Champions League run in for United. I was listening to the, I think it was Football Ramble. It was either Football Ramble or Guardian yesterday, and they were playing out United's close to the season. And when you listen to how their season finishes out, and you look at their tactics, or look at their how they're doing right now. It is difficult to see them grabbing that fourth spot. And then, of course, they have that derby in the middle of this, which will be, I don't know how they're going to approach that, because they can't win for losing that day, right? They're either handing it to the rivals, they're handing it to a rival one way or the other if they get a result in that game. Or they don't get a result in that game. It's kind of half open and six of the other. But yeah. The run-in for the top, it's a great finish to the Premier League season. This is the ultimate answer. There's no relegation fight if you're into that, which I'm not, so I don't care. I mean, Cardiff pretty much, when they lost to Burnley, went down, in my opinion. So, you know, we don't really need to worry about the bottom and worry about that turtle race there. There is a bit of a fight for seventh, too, which is probably going to be it's not necessarily going to be a Europa League spot if City doesn't lose the FA Cup, but doesn't win the FA Cup, but it might be a Europa League spot. So you have that to look forward to. But the top four sort of battle royale between four teams for two spots is going to be a really fascinating battle to watch as well. So it's going to be a great finish to the season, 100%.
Yep, and we'll keep on an eye. We'll keep on looking at the Premier League until the end of the season. And, you know, you mentioned the relegation battle, which is pretty much non-existent. The interesting battle that I want to keep an eye on is the promotion battle from the championship. Are Leeds on their way back up? That's the way it's looking.
And Villa's looking pretty good. There's their form in the last little while as well. So you could have some historic clubs getting back up. And look, I think Leeds has paid its punishment down there and would be a welcome addition back into the Premier League, although I think that they come in kind of at a Newcastle level and sort of struggle and maybe even yo-yo down a little bit in the initial going. But
Bielsa,
Marcelo
Bielsa in the Premier League, that's going to be entertaining. Like, we're going to have amazing topics for this show in the fall if Leeds gets promoted.
Yeah, and you're right, though. The Championship is not a league that we cover on a regular basis on the show, because our focus is primarily MLS, and then we dip into Europe. It's the top leagues generally, but in the close, I think that will be worth keeping an eye on a little bit as well, for sure. You know, big weekend in Spain too. Things could shake out. Barcelona could pretty much, I think, all but clinch with a win this weekend. PSG can win today in France if you care about that, but they're 17 points up or something. So I think they got it.
They won. I thought they won at Christmas. That's when I thought they won the league, but no. Well, last week they lost to a Minnow. I think it was to Essien or something, and they had the opportunity to win the league, but they didn't. We'll see this week.
Yeah, Juve did the same thing. They lost to a team that they wouldn't expect to. It's got to be hard. Like, for both Juve and PSG, how do you
just focus?
There's really nothing to play for the rest of the way. Like, focusing out is going to be difficult for them. But yeah, they'll probably clinch this week. Juve will probably clinch this week. The Spain, as I said, will all be clinched this week. The
Munich
Bundesliga title race is fun, but yeah.
Munich will eventually clinch too. So I guess there was some suspense at the beginning of the season, but every top team in every top league in Europe is coming back to win. And the only thing we don't know is Liverpool or Man City. And that will be interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say just real quickly that I'll let you wrap after this. The only thing I think in Germany is Dortmund's only a point behind, but I think if you're a Canadian fan, you kind of want Bayern to pull ahead so that maybe they start playing the kids now that he's healthy again.
Yeah. Play the kids. Hashtag play Davies. And we'll talk more about the situation. Tomorrow is Two Solitudes Thursday, where Dwayne and I do a special show on Canadian soccer and the Canadian Premier League for patrons only, which you can become a patron for $2 a month at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for liking this show. Retweeting it helps us a lot. Thanks to Alicia Rodriguez for her time today. You can follow Alicia on Twitter at Soccer Musings and follow her work on Angels on Parade and on MLSsoccer.com and other places. She's one of the most prominent national soccer reporters in the United States, and she has an amazing penmanship, and it's fun to read her often and almost on a daily basis. Angels on Parade and MLSsoccer.com. But as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We'll be back Friday for Soccer Today with a weekend preview and with a chat with Matt Pence on his great book on the Seattle Sounders in Major League Soccer that you can find anywhere you can, Bound for Glory, I believe. And it's going to be a great discussion on Friday. But until then, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.